We're back with another episode of Surrender Birdies, episode 11. Joined again for the second Surrender Birdies episode in a row, David Lee. How are you, man?
Doing great, doing great. Just recovering from, took a red eye in on Monday night, slowly recovering.
Well, that's why we're having you on again, because you've done some interesting travels recently, which I want to hear about, but really want to talk about one major specific piece of your recent golf travels that I think a lot of people want to hear about. This red eye, was this coming directly back from the Monterey Peninsula?
Yeah. So we were up at the Walker Cup at Cypress Point, and I guess that's why we're talking.
Absolutely. So I want to hear all about it, but let's start with, so you signed up to volunteer at the Walker Cup. How long ago?
Let's see. That was months ago. Maybe over, I don't know, six, 8 months ago. And then we got in, Jess and I got in. She also, my wife, Jess, is also volunteered. And we got in off the wait list and they let us know. And we booked our flights right away. It was no brainer.
There was a wait list for volunteers.
Yeah. So there's different roles. You sign up for different things. And then we got off the wait list and we were volunteer reserves. We ended up being working in the merch tent, which I hear is like the lowest role on the totem pole, but it wasn't bad. We did two shifts and got to see the place. Had supposed to have 3 days, but you go in a day early and you get your credential. And that was actually the best day out there because nobody walked out on the course at that time.
Which was which day? So the actual Walker Cup is Saturday, Sunday. Which day are you talking about?
So Friday was practice rounds. Thursday is when we went in and got our credential. And so the merch was open. I guess there were practice rounds for maybe members and friends and family of players. Very limited access that day. So we went out there and we got to see like we were walking up basically on greens and tees for 16 to 18. And we were like the only people out there. It was amazing.
That's cool. You posted some pretty awesome pictures. Let's get this out of the way. What's your Instagram handle? Cause I encourage people to give you a follow, and you put most of your pictures are, you gotta click on the stories, but you post some amazing pictures of Cypress Point and your other, golf travels. Give us the handle.
Yeah. I need to get more posts up and I just post mostly on the highlights, but, it's at DJLE.
There you go. I'll put in the link. But that's cool. So you got out there. So say that again. You got out there Thursday. You're basically the only people, you know, on some of the course. What were your first impressions of getting out there?
Yeah, I mean, so we've been fortunate enough to play Pebble, and this is just down the road from there. And it's just like, it's kind of funny to compare how it's like next level Pebble, I guess, out there with the land. And so, yeah, but we started walking because I've seen pictures of like 16 to 18 where it's on the coast, and I hadn't seen any of the dunes and the forest holes, like, some, you know, and or hadn't seen a lot of it. I guess there has been a lot of recent posts leading up to it where people were posting a lot of things, but really was curious to see the inland holes a little bit. And then so we did that for a little bit. We were nervous because we weren't sure, you know, are we supposed to be here? There's no ropes at the Walker Cup, so they weren't setting anything up. So we just walked out there. A groundskeeper rolled up to us, and Jess is like, they might be kicking us out. And he was just doing his job. He let us be. And I went up closer to take a picture of some of the flags. And he's like, hey, you want to hold one of the flags? And so he let Jess take a picture of the flag. He's like, actually, grab the 16th flag. Cause that's like the famous hole at Cypress Point. Sure. So got to take a picture. He was really cool. He's overseas. Yeah. He had an accent, and he was, we saw him each day cutting the holes actually too. So, got some cool photos of him, and just, it was cool to see him each day after that. And, you know, just get to know the grounds crew at Cypress. Sure. It was really special. Yeah.
Was this when I saw you got a tour of the former home of the, I forget his name, but the caddy who legendarily, lived on the property? Was that during that same time when you were talking with the greenskeeper?
So we got a tour from a caddy at Cypress that I met online. And so it was actually funny. So after we walked over to 16 to 18, we cross the clubhouse, walking towards 18. And someone yells my name out. It's like, David, David. And like, I don't, you know, I didn't think it was, you know, for me at first. And then he kept saying it. And then I was like, oh, someone is calling my name. It was this caddy that I met online. And so he actually gave us a tour of the holes, you know, 16 to 18. Actually, all the way back to 15, too. He showed us where the 15 tee was because you couldn't see it. You wouldn't know how to find it if you were just walking on the property for the first time. But yeah, he great tour guy. So he was like kind of thinking about when should I show them the dwelling area of the former staff who was staying there. Went back there and saw there's a sign posted, like, you know, this person was here. I forget the name as well, actually. And then, but there's like makeshift tables and like a saw over there like that. So it definitely seems like a lived in area, and they didn't move some of his stuff out. So it's really cool. And the view from that, you know, is awesome. So it was, yeah, really cool.
I'll tell you what, I mean, so I watched a lot of it on certainly on Saturday and Sunday when on Peacock and Golf Channel, and Golf Channel did a tremendous job with some of the drone footage. And, you know, I don't know a ton about Cypress Point. I'm not going to claim I've studied it a bunch. I've seen pictures of 16 forever. But until they put it on TV, you almost realize how little you've seen of it when you start seeing everything. You know, I knew that they had back-to-back par threes over water in 15 and 16, but I'm not sure I'd ever seen 15 because all you see is 16. And so when you see the drone footage, especially the walk from 14 green to 15 tee, and then they kind of go out and you really see as the drone kind of goes over the water and you see 15, 16, and then the fairway to 17. I mean, it is spectacular, but there's a lot of the other, I mean, I'm forgetting some of the specific holes, but just some of the shots and the panoramic shots on TV where, I mean, the dunescape is so overwhelming. It looks like they're playing on a beach. I mean, the grass is seemingly only taking up 20 to 30% of the land, and the rest of it is just like this wild dunescape, which I'm curious, since you've played Pebble, I've played neither. You know, how would you describe the differences between, like you said, they're right next to each other, both on 17 mile drive, but from an actual just like feel of walking around and looking at the atmosphere, you know, describe the difference between Pebble Beach and Cypress a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think Pebble, I mean, it's kind of funny to like say, you know, Pebble. All right. So Pebble has what, six, seven, eight on the water. And then like, I mean, nine and 10 as well, but you know, 6, 7, 8, 17, 18, I think those are like the great holes at Pebble. And I think there's a major disparity between those holes and the rest of the holes. So, but with Cypress, I mean, you know, Mackenzie Design, you know, there's forest holes right in the beginning. And then, you know, after I guess seven, you're in that dunescape, and the dunescape is the cool, I mean, there's nothing like it. And it presents so well. I guess people, you know, I've listened to some other pods and about it, but it seems like Corn Crenshaw has like kind of like opened up the dunes a little bit more and exposed it a little bit more. It's stunning. I mean, leading up to it, I'd seen, I think Fried Egg posted a video of Andy playing during media day, and I was just blown away by this dune that's directly behind the par three third hole. It's also behind the 11th hole because it's just huge, you know. And so
massive.
Playing.
Yeah. That's the one I'm thinking of. That's just, it looks like it blocks out the sun if you're on the green. I mean, it's just enormous.
Yeah. When we ran to the groundskeeper, I was like, I saw this on a video and I want to see this dude. And he's like, it's like, you know, you're playing around it through it. He's like, it's kind of like all the holes in the front. So I was like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. And so, and he's like, that's it right there, right in front of you. If you just walk all around it, you'll see how every hole plays up it, through it, to it. And so yeah, that was like visually stunning. And it's good golf, you know. It's like you can't take anything away from it. I'm like, you know, Pebble, it's like some of the holes you wish would be a little bit more interesting, the ones that aren't, you know, along the water with breathtaking views. But yeah, that's like, I guess that's a special thing about, and the greens there are, you know, are fantastic too. So, yeah, sorry.
Did you have the opportunity to walk the all 18, the entire course?
Yeah, several times actually. So, it's, yeah, get out there. I mean, you know, we take advantage of the credential and just, let's see, So Thursday, we didn't walk all of it. We walked like a little bit around the dune and then went over to 1618. But the next day, that's kind of what we did, is just walked right through for the practice rounds. And then for the first day of play, we followed the first group before our shift. And they were playing so I don't know how fast they played, but there was like a 3-hole gap at one point between the first group and the next group after. So we just stayed with that group and cruised over to the finish. So yeah, it was delightful. And the weather was great too. It wasn't too cold. It wasn't, you know, there was some fog, some rain layer, but it wasn't, you know, as bad as it could have been. Cause you know, sometimes down there, I guess like Spyglass, you'll have like, you know, people play like full rounds of the fog and sure. Not see the ocean, not see the course or anything like that. And so I think that it's similar, because Cypress is fairly close to Spyglass. I think it's similar where you could get that, but pretty good visibility most of the time there.
What was the, you know, because the Walker Cup famously has limited or in a lot of spots, no ropes, you know, and you know, I've been to plenty of amateur events that have no ropes. And sometimes there's, you know, at certain points, there's fans literally walking right behind the players in the fairway. I mean, you try to minimize that and there's not a ton of that, but there are, you know, it certainly happens. I'm curious what the you know, this was there was a decent amount of fans there. I mean, nothing like a PGA Tour event or anything like that, but you know, it seemed like there was a decent amount of fans. I don't know what the number was, 3,000 or 4,000 or something like that throughout the course. But what was the kind of fan experience and how they followed and viewed the players?
Yeah, I think the number is 3,500 spectators, and there's probably like about 500 volunteers in total. But yeah, I've never seen like a walking rope. So they have walking rope bearers right behind the players, so you don't get too close. And they have some parts roped off, so you don't get too like lost in the dunes. Or
hold on, I don't think I saw that on TV. Describe I've never seen that, a walking rope bearer. So are they keeping some sort of shape, or is it just like two people with a taut line of rope? Are they trying to create like a semicircle around them? Like, what are they doing?
Just directly behind, so that people, and I guess people aren't paying attention, you know, they don't just walk right into a player or something like that. Or just like there's some form of, you know, respectability there. But yeah, basically, it's funny because they have to catch up. You know, people can walk in front, so they actually have to like, you know, put some slack in the rope to either let people, you know, to get around people or at one point, and then stand behind right before they're about to hit. So it's really a process for those two people. I don't think that's a volunteer job that I would want to have is dealing with fans. But, you know, I will say this, the fan, like the spectators seem very golf forward, you know, as an event. It doesn't seem as commercialized as a lot of other events, you know, maybe it being limited and just where it is, like it's, you know, like just truly, you know, golf fans, you know, only, you know, went out there, I guess. And so it was fairly respectful, you know, respectful crowd. And so I mean, it wasn't, you know, ridiculous, but yeah, it was interesting to see two walking rope bearers follow each group for sure, you know.
Yeah, I should have looked. I didn't, because I'm someone who's always curious about ticket prices and looking at secondary markets and how that all kind of fluctuates when there's an in-demand event. Was this a tough, I would imagine I know there's golf nerds some golf nerds that maybe not a ton obviously, but that flew in from all parts, but the local golf fans as an opportunity to get on the course, I would imagine that was a tough ticket. Do you know, like, were these selling on StubHub for way above asking? I mean, any idea?
Yeah, no, some people who visited, I mean, they're saying that their prices were pretty high, like I guess like a few months out, but they came down a little bit, right? You know, just like everything.
Sure.
Like right before the event, they came down, but it came down to like, I think 500 for practice rounds, you know? So, you know, pretty penny for a ticket, you know? But I guess, I mean, you know, everything's gone up, right? Like, as BMW tickets were hard to get this year.
Sure.
Well, we're pricey too this year, so.
So you're in a spot, I mean, you and your wife did this together. Do you guys, you guys kind of just treat this as your vacation? You're like, you know, let's go to, am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, we got to play some golf before. We actually go out to, we have really close, our godson lives in San Jose. So we go out there maybe once or twice a year. And we have a friend. They don't play golf. The family that hosts us doesn't play golf, but their friends are members at Paso Tiempo. Nice. So,
you know, did you play that on this trip?
Yeah, yeah. And so, oh, wow. It's, you know, since, yeah, so we played it We've been really fortunate to play that a couple of times. So yeah, I mean, like going out to North Carolina is awesome. And I've, you know, online have met some people, so got to play Merced and even California Golf Club this trip, which was kind of crazy. So yeah.
I mean, that's an insane trip. Merced, Cal Club, Pasatiempo, and then volunteer at Cypress. Over what, how many days was your trip?
Oh man, let's see. It was 5 business days plus Labor Day and the weekends. So was that 6-10 days? So
that was, wow,
it was a good break after a busy summer. Yeah.
I want to come back to Cypress, but I want to give a quick couple lines on each of those. What was your take? I mean, Pasatiempo just went through a green renovation, and tell us about your experience at each of those.
Yeah, I mean, we've been fortunate to play Pasa so many times. It's one of those courses that gets better with every play. And I mean, it's been said a lot, but the back nine is, I mean, I don't know if I'll have a more favorite nine holes in golf from the back nine at Pasatiempo. And then like the front has kind of revealed itself to me more and more each play. So it's one of those, it's a tough course too. So every time I go back, I have an agenda. You know, I need to do better on this hole or this stretch. I'll understand this hole better, but it's the greens are so intricate. It's funny right now, they're after the restoration, they are a little bit slowed down, but I think like the more and more people go there and the more and more people see it, it's becoming such a hot ticket. I think they're asking like I don't know, 400 something, maybe 450. Yeah. To play, yeah. but it's public and you can make a tee, sure, time, and it's, yeah, a course that like should be private, you know? So yeah, it's best
when you're playing that, especially in the same week when you're playing Pasatiempo and walking around Cypress. I mean, both famously Alistair McKenzie. Are you seeing similarities? I mean, can you see, especially, and you're playing two other high-end courses that are not, you, yeah, know, is there something, you know, are you seeing from an architectural standpoint and kind of golf course design standpoint, are you seeing, okay, so this is clearly McKenzie.
So Merced and Cal are formerly McKenzie. The land's kind of bit like some of the green sites I understand are the same, but a lot of it's redone. So a lot of it's changed over. So like Kyle, sure, Phillips redid Cal Club and it's amazing. Yeah. And then Merced was recently done by Hans. And so like he brought back some of that, but there was some like eminent domain stuff going on with the highway right there. So they lost like 3 or 4 holes. So those two, like they've kind of like reconfigured, but they tried to, you know, make some of it back up in the vein of McKenzie, which is Merced feels like a modern, really, really fun modern course. And Cal feels more like a traditional McKenzie. And the thing about Pasa and Cypress is they're more truly original. You know, I think that was the big issue about Pasa was they were digging up the greens that were like truly like, I think it was like 18 original greens or something like that. I could be wrong. But the way they dug it up, they were like, I mean, they had a map. I guess nowadays you can map out like the greens, but they also like dug deep down and it could see the original contour, you know, because, you know, sure. I think we all learned like with Pinehurst, you know, when you hit out of bunkers and just build up with sand, like greens change form a little bit. So, yeah, so they absolutely dig down and restored it to like kind of the original contouring, which is cool. So, so my point is that, yeah, like you kind of feel like at Cypress and at Pasatiempo, what's so special is it's like, you really feel like you're playing a course that's been played for 100 years, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Did I hear through a mutual friend that Cal Club does not, one of their policies is that you're not allowed to geotag them on any kind of social media?
Yeah, I guess so. Which, like, I mean, it's a bump in place. It's like, I mean, you get there and it's just like, I don't know, it's just vibing. And so like, pal, this hole was 2 groups ahead. And I think there's like, I think they just don't want people running around and like publicizing too much about like, you, sure, know, like, hey, like running up to, hey pal, let me get a picture.
Yeah,
you know. And so like I think Iguodala and Steph Curry are members there, and there's a lot of like high profile people out there, so totally fine with it.
Pal's got to stand up. You're not seeing too many 7-footers on a golf course. Did you get a look at his swing?
Yeah, good swing off the first tee. And he was at Cypress Point too. So, you know, people are stopping him, getting pictures with him and stuff like that. So you know, that's why some of those rules exist, I guess.
Yeah. Well, geez, hell of a trip. I'm curious. So the, back to Cypress Point, the volunteer, get back to the volunteering. So you worked the merch tent a couple of times. So how many hours did you have to commit to, you said you had to do two shifts?
Yeah, I had to do two shifts. So so I wanted to keep, they let you like, I guess, say which shifts you would like to work. So we chose not to work on the practice day because that's the one day you can bring cameras in. You know, I love to take pictures of everything. So
sure.
Kept that day open. And then we did Saturday afternoon and then Sunday morning, just in case we wanted to see play Sunday afternoon. So yeah, two shifts. It was like six-hour shifts. Small price to pay for being at Cypress. It was actually like really, you know, there's good networking done in the merch tent too. It was like a lot of it was Cypress staff or friends of the head pro that worked at different clubs who, you know how to run a shop, you know, basically.
Right.
Jess got paired up with the Prestwick teaching pro.
Really?
So, and we were walking around with him on Saturday afternoon. Sunday afternoon a little bit. And so, yeah, it's just like, I think one of the coolest things about this event was all the networking you do, like meeting, you know, seeing like different people in golf media, like, you know, Andy and TC. And then also just like, I don't know if you know who like top 100 Rick is on X on Twitter, but.
I do. I mean, I wouldn't know what he looks like, but I know the account.
Yeah, I happened to meet him on a trip before, so I ran in and tapped his shoulder. We talked for a while, and it was great. Cool. But yeah, also just meeting people overseas. I think that was one aspect that I didn't really expect going into it. So at Cal Club, played with this father son Englishmen members at St. Andrews and Woking. So it's just cool to hear their views on culture and golf culture, you know, visiting sure. America and things like that. And the father is actually like a rules official for the R&A too. So,
oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So got to walk around with them a ton actually on Sunday.
Yeah. I imagine that the, you know, when you think about the Walker Cup, I mean, for lack of a better term, you're not going to find too many casuals, you know what I mean? Like, especially to get tickets, to even know that it's happening. To know to sign up as a volunteer, to know that tickets are available before maybe they sell out. You've got to be like kind of a golf obsessive, even to be aware of it to begin with.
Yeah.
I imagine even if you're local to the area to some degree. So you're not going to get too many folks that don't know that you really like are either in the business or just totally golf obsessed or something like that. You're not going to find just randoms that don't know too much about the game. I would imagine
that. Golf small. Tragics only.
That's cool. I did hear I think it was on the Shotgun Start, and I mean Andy Johnson described it as the best golf event he's ever been to and likely ever will be to, which was high praise.
I think I'm right there with him too, because of the access you get right behind the players and you know, you can see and hear everything, you know, when you're been lucky to go down to Augusta and you can't get close at all. You know, you can't even the people working the event can't really be, you know, if you're inside the ropes, you're really just on the rope. You're not like walking across fairways or anything like that. So, and then the land, it's Holy Land. It's set apart. Like, you know what I mean? And so actually one of the things that the son of the RNA official was hanging out with, I guess, a bunch of other RNA guys the night before. And he was telling me, he's like, because I was like, man, like I felt sad last night. It's the last day, you know, I don't know if, you know, I'm never going to be back here. And he was like, you know what? Like these grown men, like they're like, this is truly a once in a lifetime thing. And they were going around, I don't know what, you know, having drinks and saying the same thing, you know, once in a lifetime, they were truly sad that they won't be able to see again. Or if they have, it's just like, they've only seen it one other time and they know it's going to be a while, you know? So the golf course, the limited crowd, you know, the match play aspect of it, you know, it was, you know, there's just so many great things. And it's so much less commercialized than the PGA event.
Sure.
BMW wasn't so bad, but I went to the Truist this year and you go into the merch tent of the Truist and it's all like Truist flag, Truist shirt. And it's like, why are people, you know, why is a bank merch selling out?
Why am I?
Yeah. And so, but then like the merch tent at Cypress had like, they had, you know, first of all, USGA always does a really good job. They make a logo, you know, the US Open logo. They kind of merge the club and the USGA together to make an alternate logo. But they also had just plain Cyprus merchandise, which is like, which is insane, you know? So yeah, it really was like, the best, really.
Hey man, I'm happy for you that you got to experience it. It sounds totally insane. I kudos to you for having the foresight and the availability to sign up as a volunteer, but to get out there and take your wife. I mean, that's really rad. I haven't been to, mostly local stuff. Like, you know, the one that goes immediately to mind is US Open sectional qualifying at Woodmont is the first one I think of when I think no ropes that I go to a lot, because I kind of go to that every year. But for folks that haven't been to, like, and you know, sectional qualifying is, you know, not quite the Walker Cup, but there's unbelievable talent there. Going to these no rope events where there's big time golf, it's awesome. It's a totally different experience than going to a tour event where you're just struggling to see anything. So yeah, I mean, now anytime I see,
that was cool.
The Adaptive was great, but you know, and the US Amateur is going to be at Marion and Philly, which isn't too far away next year. There's a lot of events where the viewing experience to see high level golf with no ropes is just night and day. The volunteer experience, I don't know. Have you volunteered at other events before? I've done it only once, but I'll tell you about mine because I didn't love it.
I volunteered for like the Tiger, like the AT&T's at Congressional before. I think the difference with the Walker Cup is like, it's people know what they're doing out there. And
sure.
Instead of like these, lower, level PGA Tour events where it's just people with money, like throwing tickets around to clients and things like that. And people just, having drinks, and some people don't even play golf that go to those things. So you're hurting mass crowds. And instead of like a very educated, like, I think I'd be willing to talk to like almost everybody.
The polar opposite of what you see. Again, I haven't been to this either, but what you see and hear about the Waste Management Open.
Yeah, exactly. that comparison crossed my mind. Exactly.
Right. So I've only volunteered at a big golf event once. It was for when the Wells Fargo was here at TPC Potomac, and my God, what a nightmare. And it was kind of only a nightmare because if you remember, there was a ton of rain that week. And so I was signed up to do a shot link, and and I'm trying to remember, I was on the par three. What is it? Is it 17? The par three? I was kind of stationed behind, but because it was raining, a bunch of the volunteers just no call, no showed, and just didn't show up because they're like, I'm not standing in the rain all day. And because of that, like on each hole, there's supposed to be multiple people with the tablets, taking track of the shots. And because, at the last minute, all of a sudden half the volunteers didn't show up. And so everyone had to do two. And so I was literally standing out there with insufficient rain gear. And I had two, iPads, hanging around my neck, and I had to like double enter. And at the time, that was like right around the time where my eyesight was starting to go. So I was just like kind of wearing glasses for the first time, and they're all wet. It was just like, it was such a nightmare. I mean, I still had fun with it and met some cool people, but at the end of it, I was like, I'm not doing that again. And my dumbass, like, I had a media pass, but I just wanted to do it for the experience of it, because I hadn't done it. Right. I'm like, what am I doing? How stupid am I? Like, I can just be in the media tent, and I'm out here doing shot link stuff just for the experience. Like, I need my head checked.
Well, that was a while ago, right? So I think was shot link data as accessible then as it was now? I'm trying to give you a little more credit. Although I do think that not running around the camera is a little bit questionable.
Yeah.
Compared to that.
I don't know. Maybe it was, it's probably gotten a lot better now, but. Yeah. Regardless, I'm not, but I applaud you for signing up for that.
Wasn't going to miss it.
Anything before we depart Cyprus, anything else you want to hit on your trip there?
Oh man. No, I mean, it's crazy to like just have so much golf unlocked in California. And like, I haven't played TPC, but we went to that just to walk it, just to see the course, cause I hadn't seen it before. So,
sure.
So Jess and I like kept our feet on the cart path the whole time and just walked, 18-1 and got out of there on, I think it was Sunday morning. Even I think we were like, play was just starting when we really just wanted to see the place and just get out. So it's funny. Yeah. It's funny just like how, some things open up and some things, some doors are closed, and it's just crazy for the way golf is in America, but I'll take what I can get. Can't complain. Right. So.
I did hear what's interesting. I think I was listening to Andy Johnson talk about it, but that Cyprus has a pretty, I don't know what the right adjective is, but their policy for unaccompanied guests, like you still have to be invited and have the hookup with a member, mm-hmm. but Cypress Point is very lenient as far as allowing that guest to then play unaccompanied, which a lot of high end privates, especially one that's considered, you know, top three in the world, do not have a lenient policy. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. Allows them to, like I think you said, allows them to hire caddies and things like that too. And the really cool thing is that it's all early morning unaccompanied, which is like the opposite on the East Coast, right? Those are the prime tea times. But sure,
they'd stick you out there, in the afternoon, right?
Yeah, but the marine layer makes it like a less desirable tea time in the morning, I guess. I mean, I'd still rather, you know, play quick and get through it. Sure. But I mean, maybe not a place like that. But yeah, it was surprising to hear that, you know, unaccompanied tea times get the early morning tea times. That's
right. Yeah. Right. Let's switch gears a little bit to back to some local golf here. But we can start with one that we did together. It's been a few weeks, but we both went and covered the BMW Championship up at Caves Valley with media passes. We went together. You took some pictures for me. I appreciate that very much. You take some fantastic photos. But what was
appreciate you?
And correct me if I'm wrong. That was your first time at a tour event, kind of, you know, with a badge. What do you think?
Yeah, inside the ropes was crazy. I mean, if you don't have inside the ropes, you can't really follow. It's hard to follow, you know, big groups, you know, and so it was amazing just being able to follow Scotty and Bobby, you know, on the last day. And yeah, just being able to like, hey, you know, go get this shot and then be confident that you can catch up and get to the next shot, you know, big photo picture shot and then catch up to them instead of, you know, getting caught behind people, you know? So yeah, that was just unreal. And one of my favorite days was when they had the rain delay. I think it was the first day of play. And we got some sunset golf, and so had some really cool lighting for some of the pictures that day. You know, got home later, but got some really, you know, it's you don't always get to see players coming in at sunset. So
yeah, I think I was up there maybe every day except that day. I did not go Thursday. What was the I don't even think I asked you in real time. What was the during the rain delay? You know, what were, because the media tent was kind of like right next to where the players hung out, especially the players putting green, as well as kind of like their, like, I don't know if they call it a cabin, but kind of like where they were hanging during the rain delay. What was the scene?
I guess there was like a tornado warning or something like that, or maybe the lightning or like the electricity. They evacuated the media tent to the cart barn.
Really?
So some people just got out of some people just went to their cars, but like a lot of people were in the cart barn areas and just inside the cart barn or like the steps around there where they were interviewing players after the rounds, just like right in that area.
Why can't I can't even picture where the cart barn
it's directly behind where they do the after round interviews.
Oh, right behind.
So there was a ramp there. Yeah. And then I guess there's probably an open garage that would have, you know, on most days that would, you know, make that obvious to us, but that garage door, I'm guessing, was probably closed because they weren't moving those carts around. So,
yeah, I thought Caves was great. That was a lot of fun. It's a great event. That is a challenging course to walk. I mean, as you know, it's just running around, taking photos, and talking to people. I mean, we walked it a ton. Definitely get your steps in. It's kind of wild. Did you see? I mean, and I thought Caves did a great job working with the PGA Tour to show a lot of those, you know, there's tons of videos that came out about their renovations and all that and how fast it happened and all that. But then, I don't know if you saw, Lucas Glover comes out and just hammers the course afterwards on a podcast, claiming that none of the players liked it, which, you know, I haven't heard anybody else chime in. Maybe, you know, who knows if that's accurate or not, but he certainly did not like it.
Yeah, I think they definitely wanted the media to know, be very updated on the changes and the fact that, you know, Caves was going through all these to make it a, you know, a better venue. I guess the players like didn't like the unpredictable, like the change. You know, the greens were a little bit more unpredictable, and maybe some of the targets were smaller than they like. I guess, I don't know. That's what I was hearing too. Yeah, that's what I heard. But yeah, it was. I mean, I just hope they keep coming back. I don't want them to bash Caves. I want them to keep coming back so we can go cover more in our backyard.
Totally. I see. This is a character flaw of mine. I get super defensive because my whole beat is local golf. And I think I've told you this. It wasn't anything major, but I had a back and forth with Kevin Van Valkenburg several years ago, because he made a joke about, you know, local golf and our inability for soil to drain around here. And I immediately took it as almost like, no, you can't bash, the tournaments are here because I want them to return. And it's kind of the same kind of thing. It's so few and far between that we get a tour event here that, you know, you see something negative, it's kind of unfortunate because you want them to come back.
I'd rather be at Caves than TPC though, if we're gonna pick nits. But if we could go to Congressional all the time, that'd be cool.
Yeah, well, they'll have that opportunity. We had a great time. One of my funnier takeaways. So on Sunday, I got to take. I kind of put the media pass away for the most part. I still snuck in a couple times inside the ropes to take some pictures. But I brought my 9-year-old son and my. He's gonna kill me if he listens to this. I think he's 15. I can't remember his age, 15 or 16 year old nephew. Brought him in, and because if you're 16 and under, it's got to be 15. Because if you're 16 and under, you get free tickets. So I brought them in, and just to have that, see them, be able to like get within 5 feet of Scottie Scheffler and hit some shots was just awesome to see. They're both like, they both absolutely loved it, which was, I wasn't sure if they were or not, like, cause there's a lot of walking and sometimes you don't see anything. Sometimes you're five deep, and you know, my 9-year-old made it a whole game of how, you know, he was, you know, if we go, a hole and a half ahead and we can catch them, we'll stand by this tee box. And he was already doing the whole thing, which was really cool. But the fun anecdote at the very end was, you know, because we had access to the media room, and I had asked them beforehand, the guys that are running the media tent, I was like, hey, at some point, and this was part because I think I saw Brendan Porath post on his Instagram the day before that he had his kids in the media tent just for a quick picture to show them. And I was like, oh, that's cool. My kid would love that. And so I asked the guy, and this is on Sunday, you know, can I bring my nephew and my son in just to look at it for a minute? And he's like, yeah, no problem. Just not when the winner is doing his, and you know, the final two are doing their onstage post round presser. And I said, yep, of course. But then the day kind of got away from us. So after Scotty won, and we were walking up to take the shuttle back down to the parking lot, I was like, you know what, this is an opportunity because that's not too far from the media tent. And I was like, let's just run over real quick. I want to show you guys the media tent. It is cool to see. And as we did that, almost we didn't realize the timing, but Scotty was already up there, and like all the players were up there with their families, and Scotty's got his baby in his arms, and we're like way behind, you know, kind of where we maybe shouldn't or should not be. And there was one gentleman who definitely saw my kid and nephew and like had this like almost like look of panic. And he said to me, he's like, this is not the time for autographs. So I was like, relax, dude, we're not getting autographs. I did show my kid the media tent, but my kid was like totally blown away. And like his big takeaway from the week was seeing Scotty Scheffler walking around holding his baby. He was kind of like, his mind was totally blown. So that was cool. We enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was a cool experience for him.
Wasn't the only one whose mind was blown. Yeah. But I think I saw you guys, it was right before Bobby hit a shot he didn't like on that par three, like, and then he slammed his club into the, into the tee box. Caught that.
And you got an awesome picture.
Yeah. It was fun. Yeah. So yeah.
He was pissed. Yeah. We were literally standing 3 feet from him when he slammed his club, maybe 5 feet, but then he walked closer to us to talk to his caddy. And at this point, I was not inside the ropes. I was standing with my nephew and son, we're like up against the barrier. And I had my camera up, and it was at one point, like 30 seconds after he slammed his club, I mean, he was like 24 inches from his face, just from when I was, just where I was standing. And he gave me a look like he wanted to strangle me.
Yeah, he didn't have it that day. I can understand how that can be frustrating too, because he had a shot, you know.
Yeah. What are you gonna do when Scotty chips in from a mile away? That's tough.
Oh man, that was unreal. I was like, who should I shoot at this time? Like, what, you know, looking back and forth in the hole and Scotty trying to catch a reaction. That was really fun, you know.
So. Yeah. But moving on. So a couple other items. I did post. So I played. I haven't played a ton of golf, honestly. I've few recent rounds here and there, you know, played a round at Forest Greens, which is, you know, same exit at Quantico. It's, which is honestly one of my go-tos. I'm just playing with my buddies because it's right off 95. I can get there pretty quickly, but it's for the rate that they consider their peak rate is well below what most other quality public courses are charging around here. And there's no houses, there's elevation change. I like the course. I mean, it can get a little tight, but for the price, I'm a fan of Forest Greens. But more recently, I just played up at Rock Creek Park a few days ago, earlier this week.
How'd you like it?
wanted to see some of the, what kind of updates. You know,
what'd you see?
It's interesting. Nationally Trust has done a great job posting their updates and keeping the public updated on what they've been doing out there. That's why I was curious, because they post a lot of videos and pictures of invasive vegetation and removing some of the areas and clearings that are all like thick, heavy brush in between the holes, which when you're up there, there is a lot of that. And the greens are in good shape. You know, anyone looking for major changes, none of that's started yet. It sounds like that this winter is when things are going to legitimately start. It sounds like the hoops that they're having to jump through, or when you talk to some of the folks at Nationally Trust, are truly insane. It sounds like the current one, like the holdup before they start their work this winter, is literally tied to the potential of bats. So there's like, that's the level of stuff that they have. There's just so many different entities that they have to check boxes and make sure that, you know, this is considered and that considered before anything really gets underway. So, you know, the average fan who's quasi paying attention to it, who's getting frustrated that things aren't happening, sounds like things are going to start happening there this winter, fingers crossed. But Rock Creek was great. I did leave my clubs up there because I'm an idiot. And I posted this online and I noticed this a full day and a half later, and wasn't totally sure if I left my clubs up there, which admittedly is not the first time I've done at a golf course, or if someone had actually stole them out of my car, which was also possible because I generally don't lock my car. But they were there.
I saw the somebody returned to the rifle owner. Yeah.
They were there, which is cool. So I don't have not a ton of the other updates. We were just talking before we recorded. It should be you know, this time of year, there's not a ton of big events come in September, but we have the Mid-Atlantic Amateurs happening later this month at Congressional. They just did so many entrants because they're playing Congo Blue this year that they had to have a qualifier yesterday at Argyle Country Club. But I think that's the same weekend as the Ryder Cup at Congressional. I don't think they're publicizing it for like fans necessarily, but you know, I think you could probably go up and watch and take some pictures if you want. I'm not going to promote or not promote that, but that's a big local amateur event, Mid-Atlantic Mid-Am. This month, I'm trying to get out in the next couple of weeks. You live in Annapolis. I'm here in Northern Virginia. One of me and my kids' favorite places, Rudy's, which is the driving range kind of bar and restaurant that is at the same. It's at the location where the first Top Golf in America was in Alexandria, is finally closing because the owner has got his developer. It's finally getting developed. It was finally getting approved and the zoning and all that. So unfortunately, Rudy's is closing in 2 weeks. So I'm going to try to get there soon. So anyone that's not aware of that, I think you have until September 26th before Rudy's officially closes, which is a bummer. That's about it. I don't have too much to cover. I think I'm going to kind of slow announce this on Instagram, but I've got a project that I've been working on for a while, and I'm starting to do it in earnest for anybody who's still listening to the podcast this far in. But if you've been golfing in this area a long time, you likely remember Washington Golf Monthly, which eventually became Golf Styles, which was a print magazine that, as the name was originally a monthly magazine. Golf Styles, I think it became a quarterly, maybe biannual at one point, before they slowly kind of shut down operations early on in COVID. The publishers kind of aged out a bit, and I think the main publisher moved to Texas. But it was a great magazine with quality writing all about DC area golf, and then it eventually expanded to the Mid-Atlantic and even up to Philly and Jersey. But all it did was cover local golf. And for a while now, certainly since they've shut down, I've thought that this area is missing that. I mean, there's certainly an argument that print is dead. I don't believe print is dead. But I'm gonna give it a go and kind of turn what Beltway Golfers also already doing and make it a fun print enterprise that that tells a lot of the stories of local golf the way I like to do it. And I'm going to announce that soon on Instagram. But that's what I'm going to be working on. So if you're listening to this and you want to help out in any way, shape, or form, shoot us a note and we'll see how it goes. But that's it. Let's leave it there. I appreciate you, David, coming on. I know you got to get back to work here. But man, jealous of your trip. Congratulations on a fantastic week on the West Coast. Sounds like an all-timer. But thanks for joining Surrender Birdies again. And let's do it again soon.
Thanks. Can't wait to do it again.